In December of 1996, my wife and I were newlyweds. We had only been married about 6 months. And that year, we were thrilled to be invited to a whole slew of New Year's Eve parties. There were so many parties that we had to literally get out a map and plot our way through Davidson and Williamson counties from party to party to party. We don't get invited out like that anymore. Our friends have gotten old, and they're in bed by 9:30. And I'm pretty sure most of them just tape the New Year's Eve Times Square event and watch it the next morning as they eat their oatmeal and take their vitamins. But our first stop that year was at the home of my wife's friend, Rusty. Now, Rusty and his wife had done well in their careers, and they had recently purchased a home in Belmead. Now, if you're not familiar with Nashville, Belmead is the old money section of town, and property there can be a bit pricey. But our friend Rusty was handy and knew how to fix up a house, and they found a deal on this house that needed a bit of work. When the renovations were complete, they threw a New Year's party to show off their home, as well they should. We arrived at the party early in the evening. I didn't know a soul there, but my wife knew people, so we worked the room, going from folks to folks, eventually making our way to the important place, the dining room, where the caterers had a nice spread on the table. We picked up our plates from the sideboard. I followed my wife over to the table, and it was covered with party food, crudités, pastries, cheeses, dips, that sort of thing. And I knew that to be polite, I was only to take a few small portions. This was not the midnight buffet on the Carnival cruise. We weren't supposed to shovel food onto our plates. No, just a bit here and there. So I followed my wife around the table, taking a little of this, taking a little of that, being polite, doing what I was supposed to, until we got back around to almost where we started. And there was a silver chafing dish, and it was filled with Swedish meatballs. And I love Swedish meatballs. And you only get them at parties. I mean, we don't make them at home because we're not Swedish. I took a toothpick, and I stuck a meatball, and I put it on my plate. And then I looked down and I said, it looks kind of lonely there by itself. So I took another toothpick and stabbed a meatball and placed it on my plate. Now, at this point, yes, I got a little greedy. I started to think that, you know, we're on a schedule here. I may not get back to the Swedish meatballs tonight. And who knows, the other parties may be serving pork rinds and ketchup. So I took a third toothpick and I stabbed another meatball. But instead of just putting it directly on my plate, took a glance around the room real quick, saw that no one was looking at me, and so I popped it in my mouth. I was very proud of myself for doing that. The only problem with this plan was that that third meatball had been sitting dead center in the chafing dish on the bottom of the pan, directly above the sterno. And I figure it had been there 4 or 5 hours, absorbing the heat of that flame until the temperature of that meatball was approximately that of the surface of the sun, and it was in my mouth, and it was burning a hole through my tongue, and I didn't have any water or iced tea or anything to throw in my mouth to put out the fire that was turning my tongue to charcoal. So I did it. Yeah, I did the only thing that you can do in that situation. I spit it out. Blah. Now, if you think that I spit it into the chafing dish, you would be mistaken. And I'm very disappointed that you have so little faith in me that you would even think that. I was raised better than that. No, I spit it out onto my plate with the other meatballs. But in doing so, I made enough commotion so that everyone in that room was now glaring at me. And they managed to look down on me in such a way that I could clearly see the disgust in their faces at that man who's spitting food at the banquet table. Okay, not everybody was looking at me. Half the room was looking at my wife with what I can only describe as abject pity. Oh, that poor woman is married to him. Maybe she can get out of it. No, she can't. For the past 20 years now, whenever we're at a party and there are Swedish meatballs in a chafing dish, my wife will poke me in the arm and say, "They're probably hot." Now, I tell this story because it is about etiquette, about manners, about acting in an appropriate way given a situation. At a fancy catered party in Bellmead, it is not appropriate to spit your food. If, however, you're at a summer picnic and eating watermelon, then seed spitting is perfectly acceptable. There may even be a contest for it. Our reading today is also about manners and etiquette, about behaving properly in a given situation. And it's a parable that we find in Matthew's gospel. And as you will see, it is a harsh parable about a man invited to a fancy party who does not act appropriately. Jesus introduces this parable by saying that the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king who gives a wedding banquet for his son. And immediately we know that this will be a fine affair for the nobility and the elite. A royal wedding would be the social event of the season. The king sends out invitations before the event to those that he wants to attend. And then when the day arrives, he sends his servants to tell the invitees that the event is about to begin. But those who have been invited, for some reason, refuse to attend. So the king then sends a second wave of his servants to those on the guest list with the message that the meal really is ready now. The oxen and the fatted calves have been slaughtered. It is time to come to the banquet. And this time, the invitees not only ignored the servants, they made light of the situation, they mocked the king, and they went about their everyday business. Some of the invitees even seized the servants, beat them up, and killed them. The king responds to this by sending his troops to kill those who murdered his servants, and then to burn their city. The king informs his servants that the wedding, despite all that's gone on, is still on. But those originally invited, they're not worthy for this party. The king then instructs his servants to go out into the main streets and invite everyone to the wedding. And the servants do as they are told, and they go out and they gather up all the people they can find, both good and bad, we're told, until that wedding hall is filled. Now, up to this point, the parable sounds like a lesson that Jesus is teaching about those who ignore God's call. The gospel writer Matthew, in sharing this parable with his congregation, would be telling them about the Jews who had heard God's word, but who chose to ignore it. Think of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Furthermore, Matthew's congregation would have known about those disciples and missionaries who had been mistreated and even killed as they shared the gospel of Jesus Christ. Many of Matthew's people were themselves Jews who had been cast out of their own synagogues for accepting Jesus as Messiah. Matthew's people would understand the allegory of this parable, that the king in the story represents God, who first called the Jews and was scorned, and then called everyone else. But the parable doesn't stop there with that lesson. The parable continues on when the king now enters into the banquet hall to visit those guests who had been brought in off the streets. And he notices that there is a man in attendance who is not wearing a wedding robe. A wedding robe would have been a special article of clothing reserved for weddings. The king goes to the man and says, "Friend, how did you get in without a wedding robe?" And the man is speechless. And the king orders his servants to bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus then concludes this parable by saying, "For many are called, but few are chosen." As I said, this is a harsh parable. It starts off with a king sending out invitations to his son's wedding, but those invitees kill the king's messengers, and the king retaliates and kills them. And to the average person, we might be amused at this absurd story of the king and the nobility. However, the story is then brought down to our level when the king sends his servants out to the highways and the byways to invite everyone they can find to the wedding. We might not find ourselves on that first guest list, but we would certainly be included in the second go-round. And you know what? When we got that invitation, we would go, wouldn't we? Because who would pass up the opportunity to attend a king's party? But then the king comes into the party and spots that man without the wedding robe, and he casts him out. And we say, "That's not fair." But it is. This parable appears to be a parable of judgment. Judgment against those who are invited but who don't accept. Judgment against those who accept but who aren't prepared. But is this parable really that harsh? I mean, consider the numerous times that the king extends invitations. There is the first save the date invitation. And then there's the day of invitation, and the second day of invitation, and then the open invitation. This is a king who wants people to attend his banquet. And the banquet, it's a big deal. And it demands that people who attend be fully engaged to arrive with the appropriate garment. The man who was cast out by the king was willing to come and eat the food, but did not show respect for the wedding, which was the purpose of the banquet. So hearing this, does this mean that we should carry a wedding robe around with us just in case, oh, say, Queen Elizabeth invites us to Harry and Meghan's wedding? Yes, yes, you should. If you want to go, you should have the wedding robe. In this parable, Jesus is teaching that if you want to be admitted to God's kingdom, then you must possess the right spirit to act in a certain way, to be dressed appropriately for the event. Today is the first Sunday of Advent, and this parable of the wedding banquet is most certainly an Advent parable. Jesus reminds us over and over that we don't know the date or the hour of God's kingdom, but we must always be ready. We must lead our lives with the expectation that at any moment we may encounter the kingdom. The season of Advent is a time of waiting and a time of preparation. We are to prepare ourselves not for a birth, but for the recognition that God is with us. And through this season of Advent, I will continue with this sermon series called Focused on Faith, which explores the various ways that we can prepare for God's presence in our lives. As we've seen in weeks past, we must be awake. We must be hungry. And as we see today, we must be dressed. In a few moments now, we're going to gather at the table to join in God's feast. And this is a banquet to which, yes, we have been invited. Are we ready? Are we prepared? Are we dressed with an attitude of reverence? Or are we just running up to the table to grab some free food? If you are, then I suggest you be careful, because it's probably hot. Amen.